If you're looking for the skills and tools to succeed in real estate investing, you've come to the right place. This show is about breaking through barriers, breaking through limiting beliefs, and breaking through to the life that you want to live through the power of real estate investing. You're listening to the Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Rob Brake and Quentin D'Souza.
Good day, everybody, and welcome back to another Breakthrough Real Estate Investing Podcast episode. We're going to have a lot of great stuff to share with you again today. And I guess as is going to be as usual going forward, with me again is Quentin D'Souza.
Hey, how's it going, everyone, today? I hope you're doing well.
They can't answer you.
Oh, that's true. Oh, man. You know who can? Bobblehead Rob. Bobblehead Rob can answer me.
You're lucky I'm so far away. I need to do something about that. I'm going to like sneak into your house and steal it or something.
Oh, yeah, right.
I don't know. Pull its head off and leave it in two pieces.
What's that, Bobblehead Rob? You like me being the host of this podcast. Oh, thanks, Bobblehead Rob. That's awesome.
Well, I'm pretty much speechless. I'm ready to end the show.
No, we're just getting started. We're just getting started. There's a lot going on for sure. I mean, I've been working on a lot severance in Bowmanville that I just got approved. So I've got a detached house that I've got plans to sever the lot, and I've got gonna make it into a semi down the middle and then mm-hmm. add on to the back. And the plan is to eventually maximize the density based on, you know, the changing zoning requirements that are happening in Ontario right now, right? So I'm trying to take advantage of that a little bit. Right now you could do three, but I'm hoping that the municipality moves to four per side. So I'll take two and turn it into eight. But it just depends on, you know, right now Ajax allows for, I think Whitby and Oshawa are going to allow four for single family zoning. So it'll be interesting to see. I think a lot of people will be able to take advantage of that, and it may be the way to help make the numbers work in order to cash flow on those type of properties in the GTA. So if you can take a two and make it into eight, that'll definitely do it, depending on the cost of construction, as long as you can utilize the existing building structure in some way and not have too many additional costs, you may be able to pull it off.
Yeah, again, it's going to be one of those things where if you find like there's space on the lot depending and all that kind of stuff. So that'll be the kind of stuff that those wholesalers are going to be good for again. You know, identify the places where you could potentially go to four units on the lot and then bring those to all the investors at Durham REI.
Yeah,
they will fight you for them.
Yeah, I mean, like a lot of people aren't seeing what's happening in the statistics in the back end. I'm a big macro guy, and looking at the single family home construction, you know, that's been happening in Ontario, it's the lowest it's been in like decades, right? So we're not seeing the permits happening on those single family homes. So you're not seeing lots in the future that are going to be single family homes. So what you're going to end up seeing is a lot more densely, used properties. So that means that those people who own those properties, they will have additional value in those properties in the future, right? I mean, I've been doing this since 2004. I've pretty much seen like how the evolution changes over time and the density kind of changes over time. Those people who are able to hold on to those assets for, 10, 20 years, they see the biggest jump in value. It's just most people's timelines are too short. They think long term is like a year or 2 years, right? Mm-hmm. That's not it, right? You don't see values. When did you buy your house in Oshawa, Rob? The first one, the very first one that you bought.
2007, I think it was.
What did you buy it for?
Oh gosh, 145,000.
Okay, 2007.
That
So
was a duplex.
a duplex. And what do you think that's worth now?
Probably about 600. You know, it's not in the
60.
best area. It's a small one bedroom basement apartment.
So 16 years, and so you're still talking, let's say we round up a little bit and multiply by four, you're still talking like a 300% increase in the value. And you gotta remember, how much did you actually put down on that property? Like, did you buy it for
It
5%?
was probably 10%, I think.
10% down. So you bought it for 10%. So you got what? Let's say 20,000 into it, and now your value is 600,000. That's a huge lift
Well,
from
and
what you put
everything
into
else
it.
that it actually afforded us to do, which was, I mean, I think I've refinanced that place at least three times, maybe four along the way. And we're still like I think the mortgage is at like 250 right now, you know? So it has really done wonders for us. So yeah, you're right. Time in the market, right?
Yeah, instead of time in the market, which is what a lot of people try to do, they try to treat their real estate like stocks. And it's just like it can be through an active business, but then you have to treat it differently, and it's more work. You can make it work. A lot of people do. It's just, what type of business do you want to own, right? And it's one of the reasons why I like apartment buildings. Like, I've got 25 apartment buildings in Ontario. And I like that asset class because it's something that I can hold on to for the long term, right? It's more challenging because it's, the landlord tenant board laws in Ontario are challenging, and the interest rates are challenging. And but if it were easy, then everybody would do it, and it wouldn't be as lucrative as it is. So
I don't know if
you
that's true because you know, the easy is take has to be taken into context as well, right? So if nobody learns anything, then they're not going to think it's easy.
Yeah, that's true. And that's why, like, I'm putting together that it's called the Multifamily Millionaire Weekend with a business partner, Andrew Brennan. We're doing a 2-day course on March 23rd and 24th, the weekend, whatever the weekend is. And it's you can find details at multifamilymillionaireweekend.com. And basically, we're going through our process of how we burr apartment buildings.
Yeah,
So.
my only complaint of any of the seminars that I've ever been to that you have put on is that there's far too much for me to take in. And I know that that's probably the best complaint that you can have, but there's just so much in those weekends that you guys do. I
I
remember
know.
I went to a vendor take back one that you and Andrew did years ago, and it's just like you're writing the entire time. Those 2 days,
Drinking from the
hands get
fire
sore.
hose. But it's you're trying to give everybody what they need in the time that you have, because we want you to go out and purchase stuff. We want you to go out and use it. I'm not interested in, like, I've got my portfolio is big enough to survive multiple generations of my family. So it's not that I need the weekend, but if you're going to come, I want you to go out and buy something afterwards, right? You want people to benefit. So you try to share as much as possible, and sometimes it can be a bit challenging, right? But what we found is that kind of weird, but people will come back the next year or to the same and pay the same amount just to go through the course again and the material again. Right? It's like a refresher, but they'll pick up different things. So it's interesting. You never know, right?
And I remember just one last thing here. At the beginning of Durham REI, you used to say, if you're going to come here and not take action, I don't want you to come back. I remember, do you still say that?
Yeah, I do. I don't want them if they're not gonna do stuff. I've got my own businesses that keep me very busy. I've got like 586 units. I don't need to do anything. Like, I could just manage what I own. But if I'm going to do something, I want it to have impact in the world. Like, I want to see people succeed. and help them, right?
That's why you're here, and that's why we are here.
Yeah,
so absolutely. Want to move on though?
Yes, sorry.
One thing that we're going to remind everyone is to go over to breakthroughreipodcast.ca, connect with our guests that we've had along the way here, and pick up our free gift that's on there. I'm not sure if we've updated the free gift, but we're going to have a new one soon. So go over there. If you haven't been over there, go over there, get the new free gift, hopefully, by the time you hear this. And like I said, connect with all of our prior guests. And then as well, go over to iTunes. Leave us a rating and review there. Helps us out a lot. Quentin has agreed to give away some books to, yeah, to whoever writes how are we choosing who wins it?
Well, we can do like a random draw of
draw from everyone. So from anyone who puts in a review, doesn't even have to be 5 stars. You know, our biggest complaint is not our content. It's always the audio quality. I'm really going to try and fix that soon. We had some audio issues before we even started. I'm not using a mic. It's ridiculous. But so go over, leave us a rating and review. And Quentin's got a book package.
Yeah.
Offer up to random person who's in a review.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll do a book package. I've got 6 books that I've written. We'll give you, you can pick 3 of them and we'll reach out to you. If you, we'll do a random draw for like 5 packages we could give away for the, any reviews.
Well, now we got to get 5 people to go on and sign and do ratings and reviews. So,
well, we can do 5.
This is a real call to action here, guys.
Well, you know what? Anyway. I've been connecting with people all over, right? I was in Mexico for a week, and I connected with an agent down there, Leticia Montana in Playa del Carmen, and Mike Yolano, another investor down there. We're hanging out and stuff like that. Then I went to Florida, and I was hanging out with Michael Dominguez at his place in Florida. So I've been traveling around. So I hope you're doing some traveling in Costa Rica too.
No.
What?
I'm working. Listen, high season, you got to buckle down and work.
So you mean you're on the surfboard in the morning and then in the afternoon?
I have fun. I will admit that I go out and I have fun. But when it's high season, man, because of the highs and lows here, you got to buckle down. You've got to put your nose to the ground and keep working until, you know, because there's people here now, and there's certain times of the year where there's nobody and it's too quiet. So right now working, enjoying myself too, but not too much.
I got
an interesting I'm gonna have to cut you off. But I've got an interesting announcement. I'm not going to do it right now. I want to make sure that everything goes smoothly, and I'll talk about it probably on the next show. But a good interesting announcement. No, anyway, cool. I would really
Did you go to the gym today?
I did.
Okay, good. All right. I just want to make sure.
Every day, unless I can't. Okay. Anyway, we'll move on. Did you go to the gym today, Quentin?
Absolutely. Today was push day. Sorry. I was doing that. I went, did my 5K in the morning, then I did my 30 minutes on the treadmill, and then I did my push day, 50 minutes.
We'll have to put some kind of accountability thing in here for each of us. And we'll go through that maybe on the shows, because that's absolutely fun. But I'd like to move on to our guest. So today we are here with Diana Lizarazo. Yes?
Lizarazo. Okay.
And she is going to be sharing with us how to make the leap into real estate investing as an ambitious entrepreneur. So welcome, Diana. Appreciate you coming on, taking the time for us today.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to chat. I mean, I'm always excited to chat about real estate. It's a fun topic for me.
Well, I'm going to do a bit of an introduction here. So Diana is a knowledgeable and experienced real estate investor in Southern Ontario, with several BRRRs, flips, and private lends under her belt, resources, and events. As an avid networker, Diana has leveraged her extensive network to position herself as a valuable resource for aspiring investors by providing her community with a broad scope of valuable information from experts in the field. Diana's vision is to support real estate investors on their journey to success by continuing to deliver valuable content, tools, resources, and events.
Welcome again. Thank you.
Thank you for the intro. And thank you.
That's called an intro, Rob?
That's really good, Quentin. I couldn't have done it better myself. So I want to start things off just a little bit differently, right? Because we're trying to focus on the things that real estate has been able to afford us. Quentin was talking about me going out and partying nonstop and traveling everywhere in Costa Rica and not working at all. But anyway, we're going to start by just asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself and the things that you like to do.
Actually, I also went to the gym today. I just wanted to share that.
All right.
I also love going to the gym.
I loved it. Here we go.
But about myself, I came in. So I'm a person that I love to innovate, and I've always loved that since a kid. So, and anything I came into, it's always been in the spirit, what can I do? How can I support and create things? And that's actually one of the reasons why I became an engineer, was because I didn't want to be bored. I wanted to always be innovating, trying to build, create things. And that also transitioned into real estate. In real estate, it was the same thing. I went in with, you know, it's like you get this problem, whatever it is, be it something that the sellers are having, the house itself is having, and trying to do something with it. And so for me, it was always very interesting to get into real estate. And since I was a kid, my family also had that. So I kind of already started. They didn't go to the level that I went to. They were just long-term, long-term hold buyers. But just getting into that and seeing it, and I just wanted to, my view was, how can I make this into a business where I can be making money from it? So that's how I kind of transitioned to my parents, their view, the GTA view of, you know, wait for appreciation, 20 years, the mortgage will be paid off, you know, you'll be able to be making money at that time. And I wanted to be able to think of it in a different sense and think of it more in a business sense.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you know what? A lot of those people that think like your parents do have those houses sitting there all paid off. And if there's a way, there's a market there. If you can find someone who can actually explain to them the power that they have in their hands right now, too, that's, you know, it's tough if you're trying to talk to your own family. But if you can find somebody who can explain that properly, what they can do with that, you know, that can open up a lot of doors for people who think that they're just, okay, whew, we're paid off. Now what? No, we don't have any extra money. You know, mm-hmm. we're just sailing along the same as they always have.
We're going to have somebody come a little bit like in a month or two to speak on reverse mortgages, but not from just like an explanation perspective, because not a lot of people understand that concept, which is really, you know, accessing the equity of properties in order to create, access to those funds. Maybe it's for them to be able to use it for spending money, but oftentimes what's happening is they use it to pass along like a gift to their children while they are alive. And so they can kind of see the results of that, because, you know, if they wanted to, you know, actually get a better house, like the kids, a better house, they might use the, you know, the reverse mortgage to access that. So it's kind of interesting to see when you have families that have owned for a long time and they have that type of equity.
And it gives them actually, because I think one of the biggest things that the older generations have is also being scared of debt. And so the reverse mortgage is actually really good, even for the sense of that there, or my understanding of it is that they don't actually pay the interest until the end. And so it's kind of nice because you have money and you can actually do things with it. Be it like that, giving it as a gift, or you yourself investing in it.
Yeah, there's some pros and cons. You have to, I'm not an accountant, and you know, you got to talk to the right professionals, but one of the things that people kind of complain about is that they don't, you know, they aren't able to pass along that asset to their kids because they've used it. But oftentimes, like when you think about it, the kids would kind of be like, do you want the equity so you can use it to live, or do you want your parents to move in with you? Because they and I'm sure most of the kids would be like, no, use the money and you know, live a better life, right? Don't move in with us. So there's lots of ways to look at it, right? And sometimes it's having those conversations that need, like, that are challenging.
Mm-hmm. You actively work on flips, BRRRRs. You're a private lender, like Quentin mentioned from your bio. With all this going on, what are some of the challenges that you've faced along the way? There's got to be quite a few, I'm sure.
I would say the flips, I guess, are the most challenging ones, because it is, you have to be good with your numbers. You have to really understand the market, what's going on in the market. And you have to be a very well-rounded investor, I think, or at least have the right team and a well-rounded team to be able to succeed in the markets. Because we've seen so many people go through so foreclosures or power of sales, or the businesses going under. And so I think those types of things are really, really important when you're getting into things. Because for me, when getting into real estate and being so into what's happening in the market, you start noticing that they're kind of telling you what's going on. I feel like it's almost, with the information you're given, you can kind of tell what's happening a good 2-3 months in advance, which, let's say in a flipping sense, especially, you know, that gives you time to figure out if you have to move quickly, make changes, you can do that. But you have to always be paying attention of what's going on. And I would say that is actually the dividing factor between being an investor and working on the projects, like being contractors or things like that. Because, for example, I had a project where we were working on, and things were starting to, I could see the things changing. That was actually the 2022. Yeah, I think mm-hmm. 2022, yeah. Where things started changing. And in 2021, I was seeing those things. And I was literally almost every month checking how are the houses doing, how's the market going, what's going on in the news. Because we made some changes. Like, for example, the basement bathroom, we're just like, you know what, do quick and easy the bathroom, let's not worry so much about it. So we were also trying to do things to make sure we were going to finish on time. And we were lucky because we finished on time. We got everything done and we hit that high, and we were able to sell at that high, which was, you know, great and amazing for us. But a lot of people missed that boat was because they weren't paying attention to what's going on in the market, or yeah. What, or even just like seeing what's going on in the news, what's going on with the houses. So I think that's always the hardest thing, is being that, I mean, in partners. Partners are also a learning experience on their own, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I've got a ton of partners on a lot of my projects, but it's interesting that you say that, because like with those flip projects, I know people were picking up properties at the top of the market, and then they just got slammed as the market came down and the number of projects kind of slowed down, especially if they couldn't flip them out fast enough. Like if they were holding it on for 6 months, they were in trouble, right? Because especially if they didn't buy with enough equity spread in it, they got into trouble. How many flips have you done? Like, and how long have you been doing these flips?
I don't know how many I've done.
That sounds like maybe a lot.
No, actually not that much, but just I've never really kept count. But I've been doing it since 2018 was when I started doing it.
Okay.
I think I've maybe done around 12, probably. I would say between 10 and 15, I would say I've done.
Yeah. And so you're doing like 2 or 3 a year, basically. And how long does your flips take, like on average? Do you do big like gut flips? Do you do additions? or are you like kind of like a lipstick kind of renos, or is it just depend on the project?
It depends on the market again, right? To me, it really depends on the market. For example, we did a really big flip. There was an addition added to it. There was, we dug down into the foundation. I forget what that's called right now. So we added obviously height to the basement. So we've done big flips and we've done smaller flips. And again, it really depends on market. Like there was a market where, you know, flipping in the luxury market was really good money. We made really good money, you know? And yeah. Then the next one after that was, you know, very basic, had a couple problems, but I mean, very basic in the sense of the renovations, you know, very basic tiles, like very, I would say the renovator, the renter's type of property. It wasn't a renting property. It was sold to a homeowner, but it was that, you know, the basic one color across the house, you know, the flooring all the same across the house. And that was because of the market that we are getting into. So I think as an investor, you have to adapt to the times. Like not even the same kind of flips work for the same types of environments we're going into. So we adapt as we go through whatever environment's going, whatever I'm seeing, I will decide, you know, what kind of flips we're going through.
And are you sourcing the flips like through the MLS, or are you doing off market from like wholesalers, or like where do you kind of source? Tell us your secrets.
Well, actually, I'm glad you asked that because I noticed a lot of people are like, oh, I'm only about the wholesalers. Oh, I'm only about the MLS. I'm actually open to everything. So I've actually done every single kind. I even myself have gone, no, I wouldn't say I would have done door knocking, but I partnered with someone and I dealt with the negotiation side of thing and we purchased. So I've done actually every single kind because I don't want to miss a good opportunity. Like we had a luxury flip that came from MLS. We had actually a burr come from a wholesaler that made us so much money. It was 100% flip plus more money out. Plus it was cash flowing. And that was in 2020, you know, when everyone's saying the burrs didn't exist anymore, the 100% burrs, and we actually did more than 100% burr, plus we were cash flowing. Yep. So you have to, in my opinion, as an investor, as an entrepreneur, you have to be open to the opportunities and not saying I'm going in one direction or the other, because one of the things I did notice was, for example, people got obsessed with the wholesalers. Can't remember what year it was in, maybe 2021, the prices wholesalers were selling were actually higher than what was in on MLS, right? It was like it's insane hilarious to watch that.
I remember they would do the whole feeding frenzy thing, right? Where yeah, like come and see it on Saturday between noon and two and have people bidding like out
trying to sight unseen, right? Yeah, sight unseen, don't come in. You just have to give an offer and people are just giving offers sight unseen and then screwing themselves over in a really good market, you know, like...
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, if your purchase price, especially with a flip, purchase price plus renovation costs equals, you know, profit, right? And if your math doesn't work, it will not equal profit. It'll equal a loss and you'll be out of business really fast if you do too many of those, right?
Exactly. Or you just get stuck in Canaver. You get stuck in that one house and then you're stuck with it because everything's there, all your money's stuck in there. And unless if you want to go bankrupt with like you wouldn't, you're just going to have to hold on to it and wait. Yeah. Or sell at a loss, of course, too.
Yeah, I have a question for you. So then that being said, in that you have to change things for the market, what have you done? Like what changes have you made since then to continue flipping now? Or are you still flipping now?
Actually, right now I'm in the middle of a transition and doing other things, actually. I've been more on the, but I would say that what I've been really interested or what I really love is private lending. I really enjoy private lending for the purpose of knowing what's going on in the environment, because you can see actually with private lending, I would say I'm more of an active private lender than I am or sorry, I'm more of a private, I do more private lens than I do projects of flips and burrs. And I really actually enjoy it because it gives me the opportunity to see the trends that are going in different areas also. Because sometimes like that, if I'm focused on a project, I'm just looking at that project and I'm only looking at that area because that's all I really care about. But with my private lens, because they're in other places, it keeps me kind of open to seeing what things are happening. So for example, one of the trends that I saw was, I think it was 2021, flips were huge. Flips and luxuries were huge at that time. Everyone was flipping. Everyone was doing 1 year term types of flips. And then it went to when the downturn happened, what happened? And then all of a sudden I see, first of all, we had a gap of, well, when the high happened, I could tell you that I had 11 private lens at that time. By the end of February, March, I had one left. So I was like having so much money sitting on the sidelines because either some that were delayed, refinanced or sold, some that were even way too early to close, they saw the opportunity and were like, let's sell now, we're going to make money and let's get it done. So I actually, and I think I really only had one or two that were actually supposed to be ending in that time frame. The rest all came in because they saw the opportunity that was happening at that time. Mm-hmm. Right. And then from there, what happened was my money was sitting for, I think, about 4 months, 5 months, not doing anything. And I would try to look, find something, nothing was happening. But then all of a sudden, when people started gaining some confidence and understanding what was happening in the market, then what happened was, okay, I'm only doing burrs. Then it went through a burr phase. So then it was only burrs and the renovations were 1 month, 2 month max renovation. So everything went from 1 year, 1 year term mortgages and people are flipping with like large amounts of money. So all of a sudden, like quick cosmetic, turn around, just get it ready, prepare it and refinance out. So I really also like the private lending side for the purpose that you can actually see the trends happening. And for example, like last year, I started seeing, for example, really flips coming again that were actually making sense, that the numbers were actually making sense, that people were thinking, in case I can't flip it, can I still hold it? So I was seeing people bringing in deals that were, yeah, okay, you know, these flips are coming in. And there you can see that they're starting the multiple exit strategies coming into place. You know, because they're thinking, okay, just in case this flip doesn't sell at the numbers that I want or at all, then can I still hold it? And can, you know, what can I do with it? So that's what I've been seeing from last year till now. It's mainly now people are actually paying attention to the strategy, or maybe also I am, right? Because I'm like, I don't want to lose my money. So let me make sure you guys can hold on to this puppy if I need to, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Have you heard about the new flipping tax in BC? There's that 20% tax that the BC government is adding onto flips. How do you think that's going to translate? Like, because usually when something happens in another province, it kind of comes over. Do you think we'll get a 20% flipping tax? So I believe it's if you paid that additional 20% if you transact on the same property within 2 years. So
the government should pay you to do it.
Business or personal, it's the transaction. So if I think that's probably going to translate out into first into the flipping market, because you have to have deep discounts then to make it work. And I think you probably have wholesalers that probably move to flipping. And then because you need the space to pay the 20% or, that may affect private lending as well, right? So, what do you think?
Yeah, so I find it funny when these kind of changes are happening because it's really band-aid solutions that the government's making because of complaints that are happening. But they don't realize that these changes that are making are not really benefiting the people that are requesting the changes to happen. Because again, we're a business we need to keep on running. So we're going to be adapting to the changes. And so who's going to be sacrificed on those? It's not us, because we need to make sure that we can flip it and sell it. So it's going to go onto the buyers and the sellers, that the people we buy it from will have to take it at a deeper discount because now we're dealing with more cost to ourselves. And say, or it may go, and it may be divided, right? And it could go to the person we sell it to afterwards, right? So I think it's, you know, these band-aids, that I don't think they think it through so well. No. Because we're business and we need to make sure that we're making our margins to be able to continue running our business, be able to feed our families, be able to do the things that we have to do. And as entrepreneurs, our job is to make sure that we're running our businesses the way we need it so that we can continue running it. So I think like what the governments do, they do it. And I mean, as an investor, we're supposed to be on top of what's happening. So if you see these things coming into your province, we are already always getting ready, prepared, and starting to bounce ideas, masterminding. Okay, this is happening. What are we going to do? How are we going to adapt? How are we changing? Because that is the job of the business. Investing world is adapting and changing to the times. So I think, to be honest, it's going to be hitting billions more than the investors. Yes, the investors that don't, that may not be keeping up with the news and things like that. But even still, sooner or later, everyone starts catching up and seeing like, okay, this is what we have to do now. This is how we have to behave. These are the things that we have to follow now. And we work around the guidelines that we have to.
Yeah, it's so much more optics than I think actual, like the actual transactions. I was listening to another podcast, and I think it was like 4% of the actual transactions were flips that were, and they're probably going to end up losing more in land transfer taxes that they would be gaining from this 20% tax.
So because, do you feel like it's purposely discouraging people from doing this? And what would be the reason behind that? Because in my opinion, they're bringing a better, like obviously a superior product to the market.
Absolutely.
And it was raising the value of the neighborhood as well. Yeah. So what would be the general thought behind that? And secondly, if you have the answer for this, where does that extra tax money supposedly go to? Have they allocated it anywhere?
Probably to make some sort of app that nobody's going to use, and it will cost probably, I don't know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Sorry.
That explains it.
I had to say it. Okay, but you know what? I don't want to get too far off track. Tell us about REI Fam. What is it? What is it about? Give us an overview of it.
So REI Fam, I'll tell you even where it came up from my experiences of when I felt like there weren't places that you could look up people. You see like, who are these people? Like profiles that are customized for us. You look at, for example, let's say Instagram, and you have to like define who you are in three little lines. And like, I think the words are amount very, very little. And so I wanted to build some, and just also something like, how do you build trust in the communities? You know, how do you know what people are up to? A lot of the times is you have to physically go to networking events. And I think networking events are very important and will always be there needed. But sometimes it's nice to be very targeted and to be able to actually go and be like, who are, for example, like, who are all the flippers in Toronto? And being like, because I'm going to go to Toronto networking event, let's say. And then there you can actually be more targeted because maybe you're in a crunch time and you need to ask specific information or find certain type of people. So I built this a social networking platform that I believe is going to transform the way we work in the real estate investing industry, because you have customized profiles for investors, for mentors, for professionals, where you can actually showcase, for example, even your properties. You can show the properties that you've worked on. You can start building that credibility. You can receive reviews. And so that people can come and be like, oh, okay, you know, who is this person? Get to know them and be able to even start masterminding. One of the things that I think is so important is also that masterminding, right? Things are always changing. in the world, it's always going to be changing. And we always have to be adapting and evolving to those changes. And I think having a place where we can positively mastermind together and share ideas and help each other out is so important. And it's specifically for all communities to come in and work together. You know, it's a platform of communities of real estate investors. Because I also feel like for some reason we like to segregate. And segregating is good when it's related, but I feel like we should all be segregated in at the same time, like in one platform, because we are going to bounce through different communities depending on where we are in our lives, where we are in our real estate investing journeys. And we're always just trying to meet and get to know each other. So it's a social networking platform to end it off.
Gotcha. I've seen a lot of different ones come and go too. Like there's the Bigger Pockets, there's Canada Rick or something like that. There was like, there's a bunch of these different ones that has come and some have stayed. Like Bigger Pockets is still Bigger Pockets, but I mean, there was other ones that kind of disappeared. What kind of makes yours different? Like what makes it kind of unique?
So I wanted to make it, because of my engineering background, you know, making it very user-friendly was very important to me. It has an app. But the very biggest things are, I would say, the profiles, you know, being able to have specific customized profiles that shows like, what are your real estate strategies? You know, what are you working on right now? If you're a mentor, you know, like, who do you serve? Even as professionals, like, who are you serving? To be able to target the kind of people that you want. And even like the search functionality has been done in that way too, to be able to find the right kind of people that you need. So you can be more targeted and have an all-inclusive place where it's, you can look at a profile and you can see, you know, everything about them that they want to share. You know, they can have all their investor information on there. They can have their mentor information on there, professional information on there. They can have, you know, their properties. So you can show, if you want to show historically how you've done, you can share that. Right? Or if you're doing funding for a project and you want something, like if you're not a techie person and you want like a nicely displayed portfolio of your projects, like you have it there because it shows you and it shows your projects.
Ah, so if you're a private lender, you could see who, you know, you could potentially lend to and the activities that they're up to. Have you found that you've been able to connect with other people to lend through your social networking platform?
Well, generally, I feel like all the people, majority of the people that have come in are people that I know. And I've just recently actually made it public. So it's, you know, early adopters coming in. And my plan is actually to be able to, I want to kind of come in, partner up with different communities and to blow this up and be bigger, because you'll start seeing the benefits of it really is when it becomes bigger. Because imagine if you could be like, hey, who's in Texas and who's doing multifamilies? And you actually have, you know, you can actually go and make a search of there. Like I want it to be a global thing so that we are all interconnected with each other and being able to easily move around. Because a lot of the time, for example, we're in our networks, let's say here in the GTA, all of a sudden you're deciding to make a move. For example, lots of people are going into the US. You're making this move to the US and you may not have that many contacts in the community for the US, or maybe they just don't even drive very well. And you kind of want to open that up, like look into other communities, see what else is going on. Who else is there? You know, so I feel like that, like I want to partner up with many different communities of people and from different places, because you'll see the true benefits of it when it's huge and when you're able to just, you know, search people and be like, who's in this location? Who are the property managers, you know, in Manitoba or something?
Yeah, creating that a Rolodex of contacts for people wherever they are type thing to help them.
Mm-hmm. So, I like that.
Yeah, it's nice. Mm-hmm.
And so where could people get that?
So if you go to, it's Real Estate Investor Fam, F-A-M, realestateinvestorfam.com, and you can even on there download the app too.
Okay.
And then it has everything, and I made it very basic. Pardon?
Is it on the App Store and the Play Store, or do you have to go to the website to get it?
You go to the website.
Okay, sorry. Real Estate Investor Fam.
Real Estate Investor Fam.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, and it's probably better than that app that we got that cost $100 and whatever million from the government. So better get it because it's better.
The developers disagree with you, Quentin.
It's okay. It was only worth $80,000 anyway, so whatever. Anyway,
printing all of it, it's okay.
Look, I don't know. I am confident that we will see some changes in a little over a year.
You know, you never know what's going to happen. I honestly don't believe in any politician. So like,
no, I don't either. I used to not think it mattered. I think it matters a lot more now than I did, but how much more, I don't really know.
Yeah, it's really a tough one for sure. So you do private lending. What are some of the criteria that you, I'm curious, because there's a lot more people that I know who have gone into, like they've moved from, you know, the build phase, and they've gone through the growth phase of real estate investing. Now they're kind of like in the defend phase. They have their assets, they're kind of lowering loan to value, but they're maybe refinancing and pulling some equity out, and they want to do some private lending. Do you do it through like a mortgage broker? Do you do it through like a fund? How are you, like, what are the criteria? Are you just going directly to the investors, and you know, what are some of the criteria?
Yeah, it's both. I would say the mortgage broker, and I usually have, you know, people that I know. So they'll ask me. And obviously, I feel like people that I've already lent to, they obviously take more priority because I already know their style of investing. And I know like what they do, or I just, you know, you just have more confidence with them. But I have done also with, and actually created good relationships from mortgage brokers, bringing in their clients too. But I just think I'm very much of the mind of, you have to be a fiduciary of your own funds, because I mean, you see out there where if you let other people take your money, you know, bad things can happen if you're not like keeping your eyes on it and paying attention. So I think you have to be very careful with, or know the people very well that are doing it, or being involved in some way, so you're seeing what's going on. But for me, it's just more, I just do mortgages these days, more first mortgages because of the changes that have been happening.
You're getting like, what kind of rates are you getting for first?
Usually it's around 10-12%.
And what type of loan to value?
Depends. I mean, I guess it's 80%, but I'm usually, because there's some I did two last year actually that I did, that I paid for the full purchase price of the house because they got a good deal. So.
And what's your phone number so that I could.
Join REI fam, Cole.
Sorry, hold on.
You have to find me an RA fam.
Okay.
You have to be a member now.
Okay. But like, I mean, like, there's been, you know, in the news recently, like 140 million lost in mortgages and stuff like that. So these are recent things. But I mean, you're saying that you're still doing it because you're underwriting the people and they're continuing to borrow the funds. How do you avoid what happened in that situation where they had just gotten so big, it seems, and, you know, there's Toronto Star articles and CBC articles on that whole topic. How do you avoid that type of situation and still make good returns like you're doing in private lending?
Well, I think, for example, I specifically only lend to the things that I know. So because I do burrs and flips, I only lend to burrs and flips. I'm a very numbers oriented person. So for example, I'm making sure I treat their projects like mine. You know, I make sure that they have the appropriate funding. For example, like right now, cash is king. So these people, if there's people out there being like 100% funded on other people's money, I have zero interest in that kind of thing because it doesn't support right now to be all loaned up and everything, right? So to me, it's like, that's why I say you have to be a fiduciary of your money because you have to see what's going on in the market, you know, like that. Like a lot of people will put trust on mortgage brokers to be able to do everything fine for themselves, for them. But I feel like you always have to, you can't always trust other people with your money. Like you have to try, you have to know what you're getting yourself into. I remember I had one person tell me, you know, oh, you know, you're asking for way too much information. Do you know kind of like who I am? And to me, I was like, I don't care. Like I have criteria. I ask for specific information. If you can't meet it, then that's fine. We won't do the deal. So it's like, I feel like that's one of the things and one of the problems that come up is as you get bigger, you know, all of a sudden the name becomes more important than anything else. And I don't think in that way. For me, it's always going to be, you know, I'll always be checking all the people. They can complain if they want to, but I need to make sure my money comes back to me. That's the reasons why my money has always come back to me. One of the things, for example, I don't do prom notes. You know, prom notes has been something I would never do.
Maybe you can explain that to people because not everybody would understand promissory notes.
Promissory notes are basically unsecured money. So if you're not securing your money to a property, then the chances of getting that being lost, you're really putting the hands on the person. Then in those cases, you have to have a high degree of trust in that person to not lose your money or to not misspend it or whatever that may be.
Or simply not get into trouble and not be able to pay you back, right? You know?
Yeah, you got to always do security. That makes life easier. But again, I feel like because I can say I've done seconds in the past and seconds worked out really well, made really good money from them. But again, you really have to be paying attention to the market and how it's changing. And also the person, because, for example, I have a second that has weathered through the storm. They haven't been able to pay it back, but they've been always paying me. And so the character of the person also becomes very good. Like you're not just doing analysis on the deal, or at least I don't do analysis just on the deal. You know, it's like you got to do the analysis on the person, too. You have to get to know them. You have to be like a detective. I don't know. You have to know and understand where you're putting yourself in. And I think I attribute to that to why I haven't lost money because I really try to just, for me, it's very important. I'm not losing my money. You know, I think some people, I feel like when you're kind of just giving your money like that, you know, like, oh, take it on a prom note or let the mortgage broker take care of it. They know what they're doing. You're basically saying you don't care about your money. I care about my money.
Yeah, no, as you should. And it's funny, like you build relationships too. Like I borrowed, I have like 125 in a second position. And the gentleman who has the mortgage wants to extend it for 2 years. He got 80K back from another lender. And he's like, Quentin, take it. Let's see if we can get like add it to your second. I'm like, wait, I don't need it right now. Like, you know, like it's not something I'm looking for, but you know, like you develop a relationship, they see that you pay and you know, you have good reputation. So it makes it easier. But then like, I'm like, well, for 80,000, I have to think about how much legal costs are going to, because it's also Olympia Trust mortgage. So I've got to add the costs of the having a lawyer deal with it and then adding it on. It may not be worth taking the funds at that point, right? Like if I can do it without having the additional legal costs, then maybe it might be worth it. But like it's interesting how like, you know, it's based on, you know, you underwrite well, but you're often looking at the deal and the person, right? Because together they can make private lending successful or not successful. And of course, you know, you need to do your own due diligence, talk to the proper licensed people, et cetera. Like we're talking about, I've done private lending and I've also borrowed, right? So it's interesting that, you know, it's often the people that you're, that make the biggest difference. And then the asset, I'm private lending on an apartment building. I'm happy if they don't pay because I want that building. And they know that I want that building.
Yeah, I hear you.
Oh, that's interesting. So what type of advice would you, you know, that's always stuck with you and that has helped you as a real estate investor?
I would say knowing yourself is very important, knowing your purpose. I think that's what's taken me to where I've gone. But really, in the end, was something that I never realized. Like I said, as an engineer, for me, knowledge was the most important thing. And it still is high up there. It's very high up there. But to me, it was realizing I wouldn't be where I was if it weren't for mindset, which is something I never understood. I always saw it as like these crazy people talking about foo-foo things that just didn't make any sense to me. And having that, having evolved and moved and being able to go from, you know, being an engineer, full-time engineer, plus doing real estate as a business, and then transitioning to be able to just have real estate taking care of my lifestyle, was something that I don't think I would have ever been able to do if it weren't for mindset and evolving and changing, transforming, and being a better version of myself and continually growing and adapting.
That's absolutely very good advice. Always continue to grow and adapt, but don't wait to take action. Let the action be experience that you learn from, and that will change you, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, I really like that. It's great.
Yeah, taking action taking the action is where the growth comes from, because you're going to learn from those experiences and decide continually to refine that path that you're going through.
Well, I just want to say thank you for everything that you've shared today. It's been amazing. I appreciate you coming on.
Wow, that was so fast. Holy cow.
Yeah, thank you for having me on. It was so much fun to chat with you guys.
Well, as usual, we're going to put all the links in the show notes. But I just want you to tell everyone what's the best way that they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, if you guys want to get in touch with me on all social medias, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and mine, Refam, it's Investor Girl Diana. So I'm easy to find in any of those social media platforms.
Okay, great. Thank you again. Quentin, how can people get in touch with you?
Oh, you can get in touch with me. Visit DurhamREI.com. And I do have a coaching and mentoring program. And my partner, Paul, in it keeps telling me, well, why don't you mention it? I'm like, I forget. So at least I remembered this time. And I want to introduce Bobblehead Rob. He's great for creating some entertainment on this podcast as well. So,
but Bobblehead Quentin, come here.
I'm tired.
Too lazy. He just finished his workout.
Like too much fun he was having outside.
Yeah.
How can people get a hold of you, Rob?
You can reach me at rob@mrbreakthrough.ca. And I want to encourage everyone to take the action I want everyone to take this time is go over and sign up for REI Fam. Download it and become part of that family over there. So thanks again, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Everyone.